Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 205 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. It's another action-packed one. We're going to talk a little bit about our It's Raining Guns contest. Got a little bit of an update there. I'm going to tell you about some of the guns that are included in the contest. We also have a project update of our big project we've been threatening you with for a number of weeks now. Tracy's going to come on. We're going to talk a little bit about the shooting in Tumbler Ridge, British Columbia, of course, because that's really big news. And there's a lot of questions. A lot of people have a lot of questions about what went on there and how it could be prevented. Oddly enough, part of this whole conversation just ended up manifesting itself in that the gun lobby and the anti-gun lobby actually agree on some things. And I consider that really positive because I'd like to think that ultimately we may not agree on how to get there, but ultimately we all want Canada to be safer and we all want an end to firearm-related violence. So anyway, more on that in a bit. But also there's a story about the Canadian firearms program and an incredible data breach. And apparently this happened years ago, and now just details are just coming out now about it. And the data that was breached is your data if you're a gun owner in Canada. We're also going to talk about the crazy moose attack that happened in Saskatchewan, unlike anything that I ever remember happening. Anyway, all that and more, the CCFR Radio Podcast starts right now. Thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. All right, we are back. Now, I've only got two things to go over with you before we bring Tracy on. Number one is an update of our massive campaign that I've been threatening you with. If you remember in the last episode, I said, well, we can't launch it because I'm not done my work. Because I had been traveling, went to convention, had other meetings, had other things going on, whatever, right? Just didn't get it done. And now I'm here to tell you that the project is going to be delayed probably by another 3 weeks, if I were even to guess. And the reason for that is I'm going to tell you what the project is. Now, there's inherent risk in telling you that. But anyway, I'm going to tell you anyway, just because your trust in us is probably the most important thing that there is to our business, because that's how we become the gun lobby in Canada, is because of that trust. So I'm taking a little risk. I'm going to tell you what this is. So this is a national ad campaign, a series of ads that mix in general politics and the confiscation program / buyback, in that it just highlights the lack of judgment of the Liberal Party in their policy choices. So for instance, there's cartels openly operating in British Columbia at massive activity, right? I think it involves the Port of Vancouver. I'm not an expert in cartels, but like this is big stuff, right? Extortion rings, you know, synthetic drug super labs. Like, it is craziness what's happening in British Columbia, because of course you have a BC government. They're just like out to lunch, and you know, a premier that doesn't know where he's coming or going, right? Just completely confused all the time. But anyway, what does Ottawa do? They send BC $4 million. Like, think about that. You have like literal international drug cartels, super labs, extortion rings, all that stuff. They're like, don't worry, we're sending you some money. And it's like basically equivalent to a birthday card with a 20 spot in it, right? Like $4 million. It's like, what? But at the same time, they're going to spend $750 million taking guns away from only licensed gun owners. Criminals and illegal guns don't qualify for that program, right? Just a slap in the face. These are the policy choices of the people that are running the Liberal government right now. So anyway, it was an ad campaign, all in prime time, by the way. across three of the major networks. I think maybe even four. But anyway, I didn't deal with the details of that part. So anyway, that's what we're going to do. I have a couple of the commercials. They're not exactly where I'd like them to be. So I'm grateful for the reprieve so that I can get everything ready the way that I like it to be. But now's not the time to do that. Not that there's any relationship between the buyback and what that would have, you know, air quoted, accomplished, or what happened in Tumblr Ridge. It's just insensitive right now. And the networks actually agree because they reached out. I didn't reach out to them. I just didn't give them the commercials. So, you know, they reached out and said, hey, if you're thinking of sending those commercials, maybe you should delay it a few weeks because we're having conversations, whether that's insensitive. And I'm like, okay, we both agree on that. So anyway, I just want to give you an update on that. You'll see it maybe in 3 weeks-ish. I don't know. We'll see. We're going to take it week by week right now. But anyway, that's the deal with that. I just want to keep you informed. And I did take a little bit of risk telling you what it was. If that comes back to bite us, I'll be disappointed. But anyway, this was our plan right now. Okay. Next thing I want to mention is when we went to raise money for this campaign, we created the It's Raining Guns contest where we're giving away 100 guns. If you're entered into this contest, you have 100 chances to win a gun. Now there's very few expensive guns here. They're all mid-range guns and 22s and shotguns, stuff like that. But it's the biggest contest in the firearms community ever in Canadian history. 100 guns, man. So now I have the information of who donated guns, and I want to share that information with you. And I'm going to highlight a couple of the guns for you too, just so you know what's at stake, right? Because I didn't have all the information tabulated before. So Calgary Shooting Center donated guns, Ward and Bud's Haynes Auctions or Bud Haynes Auctions, Sterling Arms, Chippewa Trading Post, Odell Engineering, Canuck Guns, right? Select Shooting Supplies, General Gun, SFRC, otherwise known as the AmmoSource.com, Reliable Gun Vancouver, Jost Arms, the CCFR had a couple of guns sitting around for draws. We tossed those in. Simply Berkey. Justin in Medicine Hat there. I have a Berkey filter system too. Maybe I'll have to talk to Justin. Gagnon Sports. Stan over at Stan's Plumbing Service in Ontario. Profit River Firearms, of course, great friends. And fantastic friends, Canadian Access to Firearms, CATF. Donovan donated 4 guns himself. So really awesome. Spectre Ballistics International, Magnus & Sons, YR Firearms, and Loberg Ector. That's the general counsel to the CCFR, Michael Loberg and his partners, I think. And they donated 10 guns themselves. So pretty awesome. So I'm going to tell you what some of these guns are, right? Because people are like, we don't know what guns. It's like, I know. If that's bothering you, don't enter the contest because we didn't know what the guns were. We just got commitments enough that we could do this contest. And I told everyone that these are going to be lower to mid-range guns. A lot of shotguns. There's a lot of 22s. Mr. Loberg of Loberg Ector, Mike Loberg, one of the best people I ever met in my life, by the way. He's like, I want to donate 10 guns. And he says, what kind of guns do you need? And I said, oh, they don't have to be expensive, man. And he goes, can you choose them for me? And I'm like, heck yeah. So what Mike and his partners are donating are 3 Ruger 10/22 carbine semi-autos, 3 Henry U.S. Survival semi-automatic rifles, AR-7s. If you guys know what the Henry Survival rifles are, 3 of those. Pretty cool little things, right? Great to keep in the backpack if you're out and you don't want to carry a full-size rifle. 2 Winchester XPS hybrid pump-action shotguns and 12-gauge. 2 Winchester Wildcat semi-autos. So 10 guns from Loberg Ector. 40 guns from Sterling Arms, J.R. Cox over there. That's what got this whole thing started was J.R. Cox donating 40 pump-action shotguns, magazine-fed ones. So unbelievable. I'm like, what can I do with those? And I'm like, I got an idea. We'll give away 100 guns. I just got to come up with 60 more. So Calgary Shooting Center's donating some cool things. Winchester Model 70 Super Grade 30-06 Springfield in French Walnut. Like, nice gun, man. Weatherby 18i Waterfowler Mossy Oak 12-gauge. And a Howa 1500 Super Light in Cryptek camo in 243 Winchester. So some, you know, they're providing some nice guns. Ward and Bud Haynes auction, a Marlin 1895 GS chambered in 4570. So there's some nice stuff here. Select Shooting Supplies, a Bergera B14 timber in 243. Like some really neat things. And I think there was CATF. So Donovan, one of the nice ones that he's donating is a Howa in 6.5 Creedmoor. A Howa 1500 in OD green. Pretty awesome, man. So a lot of people are donating a lot of really cool stuff. So at least you know who's donating those guns. That was something I wanted to get out probably in the last episode. I just didn't have all the information collated. So a lot of great people. When you have businesses that are stepping forward to take money out of their pockets in order to support the CCFR so that gun owners have a voice, gun owners have an organization that can do a $500,000, ad campaign, that can sue the government, you know, using $3.4 million, that can participate at the highest levels in the Canadian election. There might be an election coming up on April 29th. That is the rumor. If that election, I know I'm segueing to something else, but there's a commitment that I want to make. If an election is called with the maximum amount of days, which is 51 days, that's March the 5th. So on or about March the 5th, if the Liberals decide to call an election to go for a majority, because that's the only reason, that's the only ballot question is, we want a majority. We don't want to answer to anybody and just, you know, get our agenda through. If they do that, the CCFR, depending on what we spend on this campaign itself, my goal is to be the number one largest third-party advertiser in the next election. The number one. And we're going to do it. So if we spend all of our budget on this campaign, that might be a little tight to do, but we'll see. If we do that and then an election's called and we still want to be number one as a community, then I'm going to reach out and maybe we're going to run another contest. We'll do something. But that's my goal. Is that there is nobody in this country that will participate as a third-party advertiser to beat the gun lobby. That's the idea. Because we're good people, we don't deserve to be harassed and destroyed and our property taken and vilified for the Liberals' failures on public safety, and we're going to fight back, and that's what I want to do. Okay? Just so you know what we're up to over here. Okay. I think that's all I needed to cover. All right. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Let's bring Tracy on. All right, we're back, and via the internet, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Hey, Gil Taka, what's going on?
We're riding this wild animal, which is running the gun lobby for the last 10 and a half years.
Yeah, we keep waiting for things to quieten down, and it's just so busy right now. But it honestly just gets busier and busier. It goes faster and faster with every passing episode. So I don't know.
Yeah, it does. And I know I've said this 1,000 times, but I remember back me thinking, you know, what are we going to talk about? There'll be nothing going on after the election, you know, and it just keeps on going. So anyway, we've got a number of things to cover. And why don't we cover the most sensitive thing first, which is the shooting in Tumbler Ridge, British Columbia. So for those, I'm sure everyone knows all about it. It's been dominating the news cycle since it happened. But anyway, if anyone needs a quick review, there was a troubled teenager in a home in Tumbler Ridge. Tumbler Ridge is a small community, around 2,100 people. This individual, there was red flags about this individual for years, probably about 5 years from what I can gather. And this person went on a rampage. He shot people in his home, and he went to a school and shot more people. So it was an unimaginable tragedy. And now we're all trying to pick up the pieces, trying to figure out exactly what's going on. I mean, is that a proper summary, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think we'll ever understand the reasons why behind something like this. I mean, you know, that's not... How do you ever get inside the mind of someone who could do something like this? But it was definitely a very dark day for Canada. There was a beautiful memorial that they did last week in Tumbler Ridge, and it was really nice to see the Prime Minister, the leader of the opposition, and all parties, in fact, travel to that together. There's more questions than answers at this point. I know we've done some interviews, given some reaction, and I think we can speak for all Canadians that when we say that this is just an unimaginable tragedy for everybody involved and horrific for the first responders, the families, the survivors, the people fighting in hospital for their life. Yesterday, I did read that the RCMP, investigation into the shooting and the firearms used and all of that is complete. So that information should be forthcoming in the coming days. So hopefully we can get some answers, start wrapping our head around it and see if there's anything that can be done to prevent something like this from ever happening again. So,
yeah,
more to follow on that.
I've done probably 10 interviews on this. I think you've done about the same number. And oddly enough, CNN came for an interview. It was a written story, but it was on their international news desk, which is interesting. And the piece actually was quite fair. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in the outro because I have a couple of comments on that. But in a number of, there's a reason I'm bringing this up. In a number of different interviews that I've done over the last couple of days, I've been really honest about the way that I reacted to this whole thing. And I just want to share that with everybody. I know we didn't talk about this in advance, but it was my wife that said, you know, I forget what I was doing, running around trying to get this project out or whatever. And my wife says, hey, there's an active shooter. There's a mass shooting happening in Tumbler Ridge. And then I was like, oh, and then my brain went straight to work. It's like, okay, well, this is going to be leveraged by the government. I got to look at my schedule. I got to make sure I'm available for this. You know, I'm probably going to have to talk to you, right? We have to coordinate this and that. My mind went straight to work because we've been through this so many times for so many different reasons, right?
Yeah.
And I, you know, looked at the news and the reality of it still didn't quite hit me until I spoke to one of our members in Tumbler Ridge. And I got on the phone with him and I heard him describe how he is neighbors with one of the victims, how, you know, his insights from being there in the community that this family was a problem for a long time and nobody knew how to deal with it. Some of the interactions he had with that family and listened to his voice shake. And then all of a sudden I just snapped right back into reality. And I was like, holy smokes, like just imagine the horror that this community is going through. Like it's unimaginable. Right. And I can't even, as much as I can think about it, I can't put myself in the shoes of the gentleman I was talking to or anyone else that's in the community right now. It must be just absolute hell, you know?
Yeah. Especially in a tiny town. You're right. It's a small northern mining community. It's the type of town where everybody knows each other, right? And just to have something so horrific happen where everybody is so close and it is tight-knit and it is a small town type of environment, right? It's just, tragic doesn't even begin to describe it. But
no,
I think all Canadians are going to mourn this for a long time to come. And again, I don't know if we'll ever truly get all the answers we need, but at this point, we still have more questions than answers. So,
The reason I brought that up is like to be completely honest with the way that my mind worked. Now, what I didn't do when I was still in work mode was decide that I was going to seize the opportunity or leverage this opportunity, which a lot of people do. For me, I may have been distracted for whatever it was, a few hours, but I didn't now take to the internet to, you know, go to work mode because there were people suffering an unimaginable tragedy. But there are people that do that. And in fact, there's a writer for the Canadian Press who is notorious. I've had interactions with him on numerous occasions. And notorious for just telling one side of the story and for capitalizing on things like this. And he didn't disappoint. And we're talking about Jim Bronskill.
Yeah, that's right. He put out a story, like I think you emailed it to me and you know, it was within, what, 18 hours of the beginning of this tragedy. And, you know, I don't know what kind of person sees what's happened, reads about it, hears about it, and then decides to sit down and write about a tragedy like this. And the first words down on paper are mass shootings have helped. Right now, the storyline has been changed, I think, three times in total since the shooting happened and since the story was written. But it went from mass shootings have helped Canadian gun laws to change, to mass shootings have helped prompt Canadian gun laws to change, to mass shootings have prompted Canadian gun laws to change. You know, that word helped was eventually removed from the headline, but it sort of lays bare how, you know, this was going on. I think all Canadians were glued to their TVs, radio, internet, wherever you get your news from, to get updates, what's happened. You know, this is involving children. It's just, I don't know, as a parent, as a grandma, it tears you apart, right? But not him. He sat down and thought about how stuff like this helps that anti-gun narrative and helps with gun bans. So I don't know. We're just, I have to recognize that not all of us are the same. And I'm okay with that, but I'm glad I'm not him.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't, you know, it's funny because I keep a little file and I call it media disinformation. Mm-hmm. Or I think it's more benign than that, media misinformation. And so of course, media accuses everyone else of spreading misinformation. And then when they do it, it's just like, they just gloss over it or forget it or move on to something else. And they never take accountability for anything. And of course that frustrates people. So, yeah. I had Jim Bronskill's story. I had screenshot it, sent you the screenshot right at the time. And it was interesting because that story was such a nothing burger. All he did was want to draw attention to the opportunity, I guess, in his eyes for this to help the gun ban and to maybe take the heat off of the liberals for this ridiculous buyback and everything they've done since 2020. And, you know, if you look at the story, it was like literally four sentences. It was, this is happening in Tumbler Ridge right now. 14 women were killed at Ecole Polytechnique in December of 1989. Then conservatives, the Harper conservatives got rid of the gun registry. And that was the story.
Yeah.
Like just.
It was just a bunch of stuff just splashed on a paper so it could get that headline out, right?
Well, and it's the headline, right? Like everyone mm-hmm. that does this kind of stuff for a living understands that there's so much information coming at everybody so fast that it cannot be consumed the way that it's supposed to be, which is like, oh, look at this story. Read the headline. Is that interesting? Fine. I'll read the whole story. Nobody does that. It's everyone forms their narrative with headlines. And that no more than that, headlines, because there's so many. So, and that's what these people know how to do. And that's why when you actually looked at the story, like I did, it's like, this is four sentences.
Yeah.
There's no story here. It's just a headline and a picture. Just, I don't know. And then.
Because the entire point of it was that headline that he was tying a link between tragedies that have happened in Canada and gun control, gun bans.
Yep, of course. Yeah. And then, of course, you had another mainstream media journalist for the Globe and Mail, Doug Saunders. And he thought he would spread some complete misinformation as well and resist pulling it down as such.
Yeah, he's the international affairs columnist for the Globe and Mail. So, I mean, that's kind of a big deal. And he tweeted, almost all gun crimes, including the one we're all talking about, are committed using legally bought, possessed, and used firearms. Reducing the number of those is obviously a national priority right now. That is completely false. Like, he was ratioed so hard on this, even, you know, left-wing commenters were kind of like, okay, bro, that's totally wrong. This is false, fake news. It's untrue. He eventually got Community Noted, which is sort of a fact-checking application on X, formerly Twitter, where people can say, no, that's not true. They can write a note depicting what the truth is with a link provided to show that it's, you know, what the truth is. And then it has to be voted on by people with the ability to fact check, community noters, before it even shows to the public. And of course, it did not take very long to gain traction. Eventually, he deleted that tweet. But he's got a whole bunch of others in the same line of stuff. He went on to say Australia's buyback caused gun deaths in that country to drop by more than 2/3. Totally untrue. Like, that's stuff true. That is, it's demonstrably untrue. And this guy is the international affairs columnist at the Globe and Mail. And he's just out there tweeting a bunch of stuff that's completely inflammatory, untrue, fake news. And yeah, there's no, you know, there's no wonder why Canadians' trust in some of these mainstream media guys is pretty much gone.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Really bad. Anyway, and, you know, the taxpayer apparently has to subsidize this.
And of course.
You wonder why nobody wants to pay for their content, right? So anyway, we'll move on. The one, you know, I might say the one good thing, but the one thing that I really thought was beneficial from the narratives that have been spinning around was that the gun lobby on this, as far as the commentary around this shooting, the gun lobby and the anti-gun lobby agree.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't think that's ever happened before. And I will tell you that I like that, because if everyone acts in good faith and everyone agrees, yeah, we don't want things like this to happen in Canada. Yeah, we want Canada to be safer. And then, but yes, you know, private firearm ownership has a place and an important place in Canadian society. And it always has, right? From since before Confederation. If everyone can just meet halfway with everyone else, then all of this stuff becomes so much easier. But anyway, that's been a challenge. But in this case, we had Wendy Sukier agreeing with our assessment of this whole thing. I think you have the details, right?
Yeah, that's right. This was in an interview with CTV Vancouver. You were kind of speaking for the pro-gun side and she was the anti-gun side. And I mean, she's kind of notorious for her takes, and she's the founder of the Coalition for Gun Control. But she basically agreed with us that the laws that are needed already exist. They just need to be enforced. And in fact, she said the laws are there. The discretion is there. The mechanisms are there. Maybe the resources need to be improved, but we have the tools. It's whether or not we are prepared to use them. And that's right. You went on to talk about how the process is already in place for law enforcement to be able to seize guns and not give them back to people who are dangerous. And she's agreeing with you. So, I mean, I don't know. It's I don't want to get too carried away with it, but I think that's sort of the first time I've heard them recognize that, yeah, all the laws in place for this are already there. It's whether or not the courts and the judges enforce them. So, yeah, that's progress, I would say.
Yeah, well, there's more than enough laws. And as you and I have both been saying in our interviews, in the criminal code in sections 110 through 117, there's 5 pages of options for courts, the CFO, for police, for private citizens, all to remove firearms from unsafe situations. And there's a variety, there's a myriad of different options that the CFO or anyone else or courts have to return firearms. You can have firearms returned to somebody, but not be allowed to store those in that specific home. They have to be at a family member's home or at a range or a store or what have you. Like, there are so many options, and they weren't exercised here somehow. And
yeah,
just before I go too far on that, I do want to say too, in I think right after, maybe 2 days after the event itself, we didn't get any interview requests till the day after, right? So 2 days later, which is proper. We shouldn't even really be talking about it. But yeah, I think it's important when it came to the, you know, everyone was frustrated with the RCMP. This is the point I was going to make. So everyone was getting frustrated. I was a little bit frustrated too. It's like, well, you seized firearms from this home. How, and then you said that they were returned, you know, so everyone is automatically going to think, okay, well, these are the firearms. How did they get those firearms? But then the RCMP trickled out a little more information. And then when they started doing that, I was like, every interview, I'm like, give the RCMP a little bit of latitude. They don't know where all these guns came from. They're trying to find out where they came from. That takes time. So cut them some slack. So I'm looking forward to getting a little bit more information about this. So I think the discourse can be a little bit more accurate, a little bit more applicable to this situation, and because everyone's looking for answers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Even the mother of the young girl, Maya, who's fighting for her life in the hospital right now, even said it, this isn't about guns, right? Yeah, I don't know. I would agree with Wendy as well that maybe resources need to be improved. We've said that multiple times. There's an enormous amount of resources being wasted on this gun grab. And I can't help but wonder, not just as a gun owner, but just as a regular citizen, if those resources wouldn't be better rerouted to focus on these, you know, the roots of these, this kind of violence. So anyways, I guess there'll be more coming out in the days to come and possibly even today after we record. But yeah, I think the types of firearms used is not nearly as important as how he got them. And so far, the investigation hasn't, you know, they haven't put that information out. And that's okay. That's important because it's the opposite of what happened in Nova Scotia, where the information was hurried out and in an effort to support a political agenda. But yeah, more to come is basically the theme.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on from that. There was news of a data breach at the Canadian Firearms Program that basically exposed all the personal information about firearms, addresses, all this stuff of basically all the gun owners in Canada.
Yeah.
And this data was breached by a private company that was entrusted with this data from the Canadian Firearms Program. What's the deal there?
Yeah, so this actually happened back in 2021. And I do remember there was a little blip of information about it, but it wasn't covered very well. But yeah, this was the largest RCMP data breach in history, affecting some 2.2 million gun owners. Basically, if you were a gun owner in 2021, you were impacted by it. The RCMP said that they implemented measures to notify gun owners, but that basically consisted of a warning on their website. This happened in March of 2021. They put a notice up and then deleted it in June. So they admit that they have no idea what information was accessed or how it was used. The statement read, "The government of Canada is investigating a possible ransomware attack incident on a private company that provides services to some federal departments and agencies, including the RCMP Firearms Program. The private company has not been identified and is still being contracted by the government." So, yeah, what information was put out? I mean, if you think about the sensitive information that's included with the RCMP Firearms Program, they've got, for instance, my name, my address, what restricted firearms I have registered to my name. All of that exists within that information, and that's pretty sensitive. I wouldn't want that floating around out there. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. That's sort of come to light again. And yeah, there's a lot, again, more questions than answers with this one.
Well, you know what's interesting about that is if you remember the press conference for the rollout of the buyback, Gary Anandasangri, mm-hmm. He didn't have a lot of justification. I think there was some talk about mass shootings, certainly. And mm-hmm. then he was like, you know, over 2,000 firearms are stolen from law-abiding, from legal gun owners every year. And it's inevitable that some portion of those 2,000 are assault-style firearms. And it's like, you know, it's interesting, Gary, that you bring that up. Because I wonder why that number of firearms are being stolen. I wonder if thieves or organized crime have information on where to find those firearms and what firearms they would find in those locations. I wonder. And I wonder if that's true. I wonder how they obtained that information. But
right.
You've already figured out the answer. Well, let's say that was true. Well, they get the information from the Canadian Firearms Program, from their third party party, as it were. And now they have a shopping list. They go, because of the negligence of the government, stealing firearms from licensed gun owners. And as a result, that's a justification to ban all these guns and roll out $1 billion buyback. Do I have that right?
I mean, I don't know. I'm getting tired of apologizing to all the conspiracy theorists, but Yeah, I mean, that could be. We don't know. And that's a problem when the government isn't forthcoming about the information that was leaked, continues to hire these companies that have leaked the information. I don't know. I know I got a call from a member. He had called the, what do they call it? The, don't get mad at me for saying this, everyone, but the assault style firearms compensation program. So this is the buyback program. He called it and he was speaking to whoever answers the phone on the other end. It turns out the people on the other end of that phone are a company named Gatestone. This is a Montreal-based international collection agency that's been contracted by the Liberal government as a call center for that program, for the buyback, the gun grab. So what information do they have access to? He told me that that when he called that firearms program, that the girl on the other end of the phone said, oh, I've got a database in front of me with your information, with all gun owners' information. So, you know, I'm like, well, who the heck is Gatestone? What measures have been put in place to make sure that the people answering the phones there who have access to whatever information, we don't really know all of that, what measures are put in place to safeguard that from this kind of thing happening? So I'm like, I don't even know who Gatestone is. I've sniffed around on the internet. I went to opencanada.ca, which is the government website that details all the contracts given by government to companies. And it is overwhelming. It is massive. We're talking about the type of money that people like you and I can never even imagine. But I'm looking at Gatestone, and they've been contracted by this, by so many different government agencies over the years, Health Canada, Immigration, Refugee and Citizenship, to the tune of tens of millions of dollars per year in contracts. And I mean, I don't know. You can't call us conspiracy theorists for wondering about the security of our data when in 2021, it was already breached and you have no idea what information was breached, who's got it or what they've used it for. So it's a mess. It's a complete mess. And I wouldn't trust this program to save my life.
Yep. Well, I don't think it's going to save anybody's life, actually.
Nope.
Anyway. No. All right. Let's move on. There was on the lighter side, darker but lighter side, there was a moose attack, like a serious moose attack, where a young guy and his mother both sustained injuries. And I think his mother was fairly seriously injured. And this moose even tried to get in the house.
He did. You told me about this. And I admit, I've been caught up in everything else going on. I was like, what are you talking about, moose attack? So you're like, yeah, go on YouTube and look up moose attack. So I found it. I watched the video. This is Sean Tufnell from Saskatchewan and his mom, Angie. He heard her outside yelling for help. So he goes outside. He finds his mom on the ground and there's a moose attacking her. So he runs up, he punches the moose in the face, which is, it's like something out of a comic book, right? He starts fighting with the moose. He grabs a shovel and tries to fight the moose off, and the moose charges at him, sort of pins him in the doorframe, lifts him up, smashes him against the doorframe, breaks his ribs, like just totally crazy story. And as this is going on, as he's kind of wrestling with this moose, he's got him by the ears. The moose is breaking his ribs, smashing him into the doorframe. The moose sort of turns towards the mom to go back at her. And so Sean yells inside for his mother's boyfriend to grab a gun. He brings a gun. He shoots the moose over a dozen times, killing the moose and saving his mother's life, which is insane. And I watched this interview and the mom is just like, she was so grateful to her son for saving her life. She was very seriously injured, unable to walk, and said that Sean fought the moose like a complete savage. That was literally her words. So I don't know. It sounds like some sort of comedy skit, but it's absolutely true. And it just goes to show you, like, even in the comfort of your home, you weren't safe. This moose was trying to get in the house and he was baring his teeth at him. And like, that would be terrifying. These are massive animals. So just a wild, wild story again, where a gun saved his life from a crazy home intruder of a moose.
Yeah, that's crazy. Maybe that moose was on some of David Eby's safe supply meth, government subsidized methamphetamine.
I don't know, wrong province, but it, who knows? Maybe, could be.
They get around.
Yeah, they do get around. Yeah, they travel.
They might. Maybe he migrated from British Columbia with a bunch of safe supply. Maybe he grew up in a bad part of the forest and it's not his fault. Yeah. Maybe it was just the way he was brought up.
Hung out with the wrong crowd.
Yeah, hanging with the wrong moose. And next thing you know, he's out there committing crimes.
A huge shout out to Sean for saving his mom's life. And yeah, hopefully they got to eat some steaks out of that moose.
Yeah, wild. What a wild story.
Crazy.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
I would say only in Saskatchewan because that would sound good, but I don't know. That could happen anywhere, really.
I don't know. It could happen anywhere there's moose, right? They're big animals and they're aggressive.
They get angry.
They do.
So anyway, we've been at it a while. I think we've covered everything on the list. So yeah, I appreciate the update and I guess we'll see you in the next one.
All right. We'll see you then.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 205 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Really appreciate it. Just wanted to mention a couple of things before I let you go. Interestingly enough, I did this this interview with CNN. It was a written interview, and we posted it. And I ended up getting, you know, it's interesting because in the interview, the subject matter was, why is the Canadian gun lobby, like, well, sort of, who is the Canadian gun lobby? What do they believe in? Like, the interview is... The interview in these things is very long. Sometimes they're like 20, 30 minutes. Give me anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes, right? And I've had some longer ones, like an hour or more. And then when the article comes out or you see it on TV, it can be as bad as literally one sentence or more, or like one quote in an article, right? Like that's just how it works with the mainstream media. It's very fast. So anyway, it's a very abbreviated format. Anyway, I could get into why, but anyway, we'll move on. So anyway, whenever we have an opportunity to talk to the mainstream media and we have access to their platform, we take that opportunity to get our message out. And so this message was, gun owners are reasonable people. The CCFR, who are Canada's gun lobby, is a reasonable organization of reasonable people asking for reasonable things. We're not asking for anything, you know, crazy over here, right? So in the interview, I'd said, you know, as an organization and most gun owners don't oppose regulation, but it has to be regulations that have some demonstrable positive effect on public safety. And if they're just regulations there for political opportunism or just to punish gun owners or just to make people feel good, whatever that is, they have to be withdrawn. Not a controversial statement, but a couple of people are like, yeah, I disagree. And basically there should be no regulation. And it's just an interesting thing. I call it overcorrection. People tend to overcorrect, and that's sort of proportional to how long they've been abused. So gun owners have been abused relentlessly and just savagely for 35 years, right? Primarily. Really bad, like lied about, and slandered, and villainized, and had their stuff taken and had their motives assigned by leftists. You know, it's just the most abhorrent, disgusting, toxic behavior. I know all about it. Okay. So what happens to normal people is that pendulum gets getting pushed, right? And so you get it to the point where your brain's like, nope, it's going all the way back to this side. But if you're sitting from the middle, you're like, holy smokes, man, how did you get over here? It's just because you've been abused for so long that you're pushing it all the way back, right? And if you think of an argument, that's how that happens. Would you just explode on a stranger because you had a minor disagreement? No. But if that person had been hacking on you, calling you names and villainizing you and trying to wreck your life for 35 years, that explosion now feels like it's justified. So people are like, nah, you know, we want no regulation. It's like, no, man, that's not reasonable. And you're never going to get that anyway. So just remember when the pendulum, because the pendulum's way over here now, 100%, I'm living it, right? Don't forget that your target is still 90 degrees. Your target is still just back to the middle where it all started, right? Because if you start behaving in a way that denotes that you think the pendulum should be all the way over here, you lose the argument because one side is being completely unreasonable. And if you become completely unreasonable, there is no conversation. The distance between the two is too far. Now it just becomes just, you know, erratic behavior and nothing gets solved. So anyway, when I have a chance to go on something like CNN or CBC or CTV or any of these things, I take every opportunity to do it. Same thing with Wilson. We do as a team. Every opportunity to get our message out there. And always Are we trying to represent gun owners as who they really are, which is hardworking, honest, good, law-abiding people, reasonable people, right? So that just puts the other side at a bit of a disadvantage. They have an advantage because the government doesn't think you should own guns, right? They look at you like subjects, not citizens, obviously. But, you know, that helps our cause. And we just got to keep on going and be steadfast and don't quit. Just keep the pressure up and keep talking instead of blasting these people when we get on. And then we don't have that opportunity anymore. Anyway, it's just some interesting dynamics I see. People are really prone to overcorrecting because they're frustrated, right? And they're just undermining themselves. So anyway, that's why we keep cool heads over here. Something else I want to tell you is I'm going to court on this coming Tuesday for a defamation suit that we launched 5 years ago, man. Yeah. So I don't talk about that stuff very often because we always have so much other stuff to talk about. But yeah, we have sued people. We have active lawsuits, defamation suits now. We send out a lot of defamation letters, defamation notices, and we're serious. Like if you ever get a defamation notice from me, I've already made the decision to sue you on behalf of the CCFR. Just so you know, if you're watching this and you're somebody that likes to run their mouth online or on television, right? So we have sued news media outlets, whatever you want to call them. We've sued journalists. We have active lawsuits now against people like that. And we're going to continue to do that. In fact, if there's any regret that I have over all my time at the CCFR is that I didn't sue enough people. I certainly should have sued Bill Blair when I had the chance. That was a mistake. If I admit one mistake I've made since I started with the CCFR, since the CCFR started as an organization, it wasn't suing Bill Blair. We should have sued him because I had him. I had him dead to rights to win a lawsuit against him. But anyway, I missed that opportunity. I should have done it. Although we weren't as big as we are now. But anyway, yeah, so that's ongoing. So yeah, we'll see what the outcome of that is. And when I have the outcome, which I think is probably going to go for another 6 months or a year, to be honest with you. I think there's going to be more days in court needed. But whenever that gets resolved, I'll tell you about that or tell you what I can tell you at the point. But I just wanted to let you guys know, like, we're still doing that kind of stuff, even though I don't talk about it. And we're still holding people to account. I just had somebody settle out just like 2 weeks ago or something like that. Not settle out with a settlement kind of thing, but a defamation notice was sent. This person knew that they were going to be sued, 100% chance they were going to be sued unless they backed off, issued an apology and took down their post. And they did. So that's good. Anyway. And then last but not least, I want to read the list of people that have donated guns to the CCFR for the It's Raining Guns contest one more time, just because they deserve it. These are the people in our community, the vendors and people that own businesses that reach in their own pocket in order to give money to the CCFR so we can do all these big things in order to support you, the gun owner, and support me as a gun owner too, right? So they just deserve a lot of recognition. Calgary Shooting Center, Wards and Buds Haynes Auction. I don't know if that's a typo. I'm going to find that out for the next one. Sterling Arms, Chippewa Trading Post, Odell Engineering, Select Shooting Supplies, General Gun, SFRC, Reliable Gun Vancouver, Jost Arms, Simply Berkey, Gagnon Sports, Stan's Plumbing Service. Thanks, Stan. Profit River Firearms, Canadian Access to Firearms, right? CATF. Spectre Ballistics International, Magnus & Sons, YR Firearms, and of course, General Counsel to the CCFR in Calgary, Alberta, Loberg Echter, Michael Loberg, our lawyer. So great. And Loberg Echter, like they donated 10 guns, you know, like people are really helping us, you know, Sterling Arms, 40 guns, Phil O'Dell, 20 guns, like just some people really, really helping us. So anyway, really appreciate it. If you heard the name of your gun store or a gun store that's near you and you heard that name, go buy from them. Become a customer of theirs because they are helping you. So anyway, just thought I'd mention that. Okay, that's it. I got through everything. Sorry, it was took a little while. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. We'll have a whole lot more news for you in the next one. Oh yeah. And if you want to do this, or enter the, It's Raining Guns contest, go to ccfr.ca right now. There's a big pop-up. You can click that, or there's a button in the upper right, if memory serves me correctly, that says contest. Click that, donate $20, get a free entry into the contest. You have 100 chances to win. Contest ends May 1st and make sure that you read all the contest rules before entering so you know exactly what you're doing. All right. Anyway, thanks everyone for your time. Take care. We'll see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.